Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope you all had a great week, and I have some good plans for the weekend. I appreciate all of you tuning in to our weekend show, and as always, you can email me at any time, fleck@kereport.com. You can also email shad@kereport.com with any questions for any of our guests, and especially any thoughts you have on the companies that we have featured throughout the week. I am kicking off this show with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex. Mark and I are going to look more broadly at currencies, markets, and even the bond market. And in the second half of this first hour, we're going to shift our focus more to the precious metals. Now, Mark, let's start off with currencies, because you are really our in-house currency expert here. I chat with you pretty much every week, and the currency markets, with how large they are, can give us a nice barometer of where money is shifting and what investors are focused on. Let's start at the very high level here, Mark. What's strong in terms of currencies? What's weak? What do people have an eye on?
Yeah, I think that the most important thing to watch this week, in the week ahead really, is the dollar, which has been selling off in April and in May, has also began June on soft footing, but last week it snapped back. And the snapback of the dollar, that short squeeze lifting it into the weekend, took up basically is at new highs for the week, but also is taking place as U.S. interest rates remain very low. Our 10-year yield fell about 12 basis points this past week, which is the most in about a year's time. And we got down to the low end of 140, like 141, 142 yield on the 10-year, and still the dollar rallied. And so I think I'd be careful of that there could be. It's always hard to know what happens, to project what happens on Friday, as if it's necessarily a trend change. But the technical indicators, momentum indicators I look at, like MACD, slow stochastic, had all been warning of the risk to the upside to the dollar, but the sideways movement had seemed to alleviate some of the extreme overextended condition of the momentum indicators. But ahead of the FOMC meeting next week, we could see a further dollar gains.
So, Mark, looking at this dollar chart, and let's focus on the U.S. dollar when it comes to the dollar index. Look, the dollar was on a nice rebound, I guess we can call it, for the first really 3 months of 2021, and then 2 months dropped right back down. However, the recent rebound here has come at a slightly higher level. The low at the very beginning of the year, 89.17. The most recent low about 2 to 3 weeks ago, 89.51. If this level holds, is that enough to signify a change in direction? Maybe the weakness in this downtrend, really ever since the spike when COVID first hit the U.S., do you think that downtrend could be over?
I think that there's always a chance. I've learned my lesson the hard way in the foreign exchange market to think that something could not take place. But on the other hand, for me, the key is what's the driver. And I still think that in order, given the size of the U.S. trade and budget deficits, it needs higher interest rates. And if it doesn't get to higher interest rates, then the dollar's got to bear more of the burden. So I think that this is a technical upswing, a technical correction of the dollar. But I'm not convinced that as your point was, I think that it's not like the dollar correction just began today or last week. The dollar index made its low in very late May, and it's been ever so gently rising. I think we need to get above 91 or so to be anything of note. And even then, it just sets us up for a test on the 91.50 area, which houses the 200-day moving average and is about the halfway point of the dollar's decline in April and May.
Now, does this weakness in the dollar, and let's call it broad weakness, how much does it have to do with the fact that the Fed seems pretty hardcore to not taper in the near term when we're seeing other central banks start to taper even in the face of some better economic data? Is the Fed the main contributor here to the weak dollar?
Yeah, that's interesting. So it matters how you view it, I think. Is the Fed keeping rates down? And a year ago, I would have thought the Fed stood away from the market interest rates would have fallen further, because without that monetary support, the economic downturn from the COVID could have lasted longer, could have been deeper. But now I kind of suspect that maybe if the Fed were to taper, interest rates would rise, thinking that that's a confidence in the economy, confidence that they're moving closer to their targets. So I do think that the Fed's important, but it's not the only thing in town. You know, the market, many people had also expected that given these inflation readings, interest rates would be higher. And so there are a lot of bearers who were short the treasuries, even though in the futures market, the net position was net long treasuries. There was still a substantial short position, and there is some sign of the shorts having covered, being squeezed out. But also, we've had some very strong auctions in the last couple of weeks, suggesting that there is a strong demand for the new treasury issues, even so. It's not just the short covering, but there's actually new longs being established, new buying coming into the market. And so I think that's all helped keep interest rates low. And I think also a lot of people looking at the inflation numbers, look at the sort of, we know not to just look at the headline, but to dig deeper a little bit. And what we find is that autos, used autos in particular, because of the shortage of semiconductor chips, people are buying used cars, and there's a scramble for them, shooting prices higher. This alone contributed to about a third of the overall increase in U.S. CPI. Other things from a year ago, you know, were so cheap, like airlines, hotels. And as the economy reopens, these prices are normalizing. And as they normalize, it looks like we have higher inflation. So people are really discounting this, thinking that maybe the Fed is right. Maybe the guys like Lawrence Summers and other smart economists who have been worried about inflation maybe overstate the case. And so maybe the market's coming around to a view that inflation might in fact be transitory. And when I look at some inflation gauges, like in the market, not surveys, but market, like what's priced in the market, we look at things like the 10-year break-even, the difference between the inflation-protected security and the traditional conventional bond, and that peaked 6 weeks ago, not too far, about 260 basis points or so. And the same thing with the five-year forward, which is you take a 10-year bond, you take the last 5 years of it, you do a forward on that. And that also is telling us that inflation expectations still remain quite modest, above 2% for sure, but not a breakaway where there's some kind of like return to the 1970s kind of sense in the market.
So, Mark, what does this mean for markets and those trying to take a big picture view of the market? It sounds like you are in the camp that says this inflation could very much be transitory, and we're even seeing market participants bet on that as well. So does that mean that market, well, where does that leave markets? Let me ask you that.
So, yeah, so I do think that there's so much liquidity out there still. That still is rewarding risk appetites. On the other hand, I think that there's what cost does this come about reflating the economy? And I think that there could be some financial excesses. You know, we're seeing this in the sense that the Federal Reserve, you know, is still buying $40 billion of agency mortgage-backed securities every month. And like in Canada, Australia, the UK, New Zealand, some other countries, house prices are taking off, rising at double-digit levels. And so I think that's a concern. I think that it seems to me that the risk is that we're at a late stage here of a lot of stimulus in the system. And it might not, it's sort of like that moment comes, that Minsky moment, if you will, comes just as things slow down. So I think that while things are growing fast, and we're going to get strong GDP. The world is really looking at strong second half GDP. But the second that it slows down, I think that is when we need that financial market adjustment. So I don't think we're there yet. So I think that there still is room for these risk appetites, and we're seeing this. People are maybe shifting more to value, and I think about European stocks outperforming the U.S. The real laggard has been Japan in terms of the economy, in terms of inflation, in terms of the vaccine. And so maybe Japan is ready to reaccelerate in the second half of the year after contracting for the last couple of quarters.
Okay. Well, one other comment regarding the general broad markets. It's something that I feel like we've been seeing in the last couple of weeks here is a general slowdown in markets and a lot of other sectors. Maybe that whole sell in May and go away was very true this year. Could also be called the summer doldrums. Mark, what have you seen? You're based in New York. In terms of general interest in the market, is it fair to say that people are paying less attention to financial markets right now?
It could be. I mean, people have other things, like people returning back to work, summer vacations. And I think that that's an interesting chart I've seen, is how the volume month after month has been slowing down compared to 2020 and even 2019, as if people are going back to work and don't have time to do all this day trading and whatnot. I think that also, frankly, the market seemed much harder than last year. Last year, we had to get our heads around the idea of a weak economy, strong stock market. But this year, stock markets seem relatively strong, but it's been a rotation. And so the economies are strong, but the stocks aren't doing what people have expected them to do, I think.
So what does that mean? Where does this leave us? Are markets going to get in that complacent nature again? The VIX is down in the mid-teens.
The VIX is down. We've got the dollar-yen volatility is low. I think that there's a lot of things. So I think that this is the kind of time for myself, my own personal account, is making sure I have cash on the sidelines. The cash on the sidelines, it's not wasting. It's really dry gunpowder for a pullback, which I think that, you know, we've seen some like little hiccups, and I just want to take advantage of the next hiccup.
So, Mark, if we start to look ahead here, we can look at all the economic data we want. And quite frankly, we've gotten a lot of inflation data. A lot of people have pointed to that as potentially a key driver for the markets and jobs data. But overall, it doesn't seem like any of this data has really had a major impact, maybe a very short-term impact. But even those day-to-day swings when that data is released, they seem to be smaller currently. Does that mean that as much as we want to analyze data, it doesn't really matter what the data is right now? It's more about what central banks are doing?
Yeah, in some ways, I think you're right. I mean, that the data doesn't matter until it does. And in the meantime, I think that the signals that we're getting, and especially I think that but it's not necessarily on a day-to-day that tight of a correlation, but it does seem that low interest rates help equities, help underpin risk assets. And so it does seem to me that central banks are the key focus, and that's why the FOMC meeting next week is really the key, because if they, in their comments, if they begin preparing the market for tapering, I think maybe we see a more of a summer correction.
Do you think the Fed is going to start to say anything about winding back some of their easy monetary policies? We've seen it in other central banks, but I don't know, the Fed still has not really given us too much of a hint that they're going to start tapering.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that what the Fed will do is they'll say we may begin talking about it. Like they've already said, we'll talk about it in upcoming meetings. The market does not expect it to take place then, a formal announcement of tapering, until either the August Jackson Hole conference or the September FOMC meeting. So what this means is that the Fed will begin tapering sometime in Q4. The irony about this, I think, strikes me, especially in today, ahead of the weekend, a couple of days after the ECB met, they say they are going to finish their bond buying. Their emergency bond buying program ends next March. It's possible that the Federal Reserve is still tapering by the time the ECB, the European Central Bank, ends their bond buying.
So what does that mean? What's the carryover going to be for the Fed, forcing the Fed's hands and for markets?
Yeah, I think it forces the market's hand, because if the Fed is still tapering, I think this is just, for me, part of the big dollar negative story, the bear market for the dollar. And I think that what that means, I think, for dollar-based investors, it means to think about, maybe for the first time in a few years, diversifying into other markets. And even in Canada, I think that the trick there for Canadian investors, Canadian dollar investors, is that when the U.S. dollar is weak, the Canadian dollar typically underperforms against Europe. And so it might make sense for Canadian dollar investors to also look to diversify into European or perhaps Japanese markets.
Okay, so that brings us full circle then. Dollar weakness here. If this little rebound in the dollar is nothing more than maybe even a dead cat bounce, and we do continue to see some broad dollar weakness, how does that carry over to commodities? Is that just more ammo for that whole commodity bull market or even super cycle argument?
Yeah, I mean, there's a case can be made that a weaker dollar favors higher commodity prices, partly because, you know, you're a producer of these commodities. You get dollars for them, and those dollars just don't buy you as much as it would otherwise, and so tends to lift commodity prices. I think that from say, a policymaker's point of view, you have two sources, right, supply and demand. The demand issue, helped fueled by the reopenings of the economy, fiscal stimulus, that is of a fixed nature. Whether it lasts, I mean, if you look at countries' GDP forecasts, and the World Bank just updated theirs. See how next year is still going to be a strong year, 2022. But by the time we the second half of 2022, early 2023, we're going to be back to the type of growth levels that are more normal for the high-income economies. So that means that the demand is going to cool off, and at the same time, the supply. Already you're seeing different industry respond to the shortage of supply, whether it's semiconductor chips, whether it's lumber, whether it's metals. It seems to me that countries and companies are responding to fill in, you know, to see that profit opportunity and provide that supply. So supply seems to be a short-run problem, while the fiscal stimulus, as it runs off, makes it so that demand might be a temporary issue as well. Isn't that the worst possible case? There's more supply coming in the market just at that same moment in time where demand begins normalizing, going back down to 2019 levels.
Okay, but that's a couple of years out. So there could be a couple of year run still ahead of these commodities, or do you think just how aggressively some of these commodities have moved that maybe it's more of a sideways consolidation or at least a little less momentum to the upside?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that we're seeing, I'm watching lumber prices. That's a big deal for in the U.S., adding about $30,000 to new homes. And lumber has basically almost given back half of its rally. It's still, I mean, it's basically quadrupled. And so giving back half, it's still double what it was, say, late 2019. But I think that in some areas, the momentum has been broken. Oil price, on the other hand, remain very high, $70 a barrel, and it's holding up fairly well. So it's hard to say. So I suspect, though, that it's going to vary from commodity to commodity.
Okay. Well, Mark, we're out of time here, so we are going to wrap it up. But great chatting with you. Thanks for taking these kind of more broad questions on currencies and general market drivers. Still seems like we are subject to what central banks are going to do, but I think focusing on the U.S. dollar and seeing if it truly did put in a bottom just below that 90 level, or if it's nothing more than a short-term bounce and we continue to head lower, that's a major consideration. Mark, thanks as always for your time. Mark also writes the Mark to Market blog, which I highly recommend checking out on a daily basis, where he breaks down individual data and key market moves. So Mark, as always, I appreciate your time. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, and good luck, everybody.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are going to focus a lot more in these next two segments on the resource sector, especially the precious metals, as I am chatting with Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. Now, Jeff, it's no denying that the precious metals market has drastically slowed. This week especially, minus the sell-off of gold at the tail end of the week, but still, not even a big move when you consider just how slow this whole week has been. And even going back really throughout the month of June here, gold seems to have flatlined right around that $1,900, and silver seems stuck right around that $28 level. It really brings up the thought to a lot of the seasoned precious metals investors of seasonality. Now, I know a lot of technicians hate to talk about seasonality, but there is no denying that typically over summer, in a normal summer, the market slows broadly, and that carries over into the precious metals. Jeff, I have to ask you, do you think, because things have really started to open up in the U.S., even Canada's moving towards a reopening, do you think that seasonality or the summer doldrums are here early and they could be here for a while?
Well, yeah. It's undeniable that there's seasonality. You could argue about the causes of seasonality and the permanence of it, and it does vary from year to year. And you do have years, for example, the last 2 years, you've seen strength in gold and silver prices in July, which is unusual on a historical basis. But, you know, over the last 2 years, you've seen prices rise primarily for gold, and silver's come along primarily for the ride with gold in July into early August. And that has to do with the August COMEX gold contract, and it's overridden seasonality. What we always say is, you know, you can, seasonality exists. You can do the math. You can see the seasonality. You can see that prices tend to be weaker in the second and third quarters after a stronger first quarter, you know, and then you can argue about why that is, you know. But what we always say at CPM Group is that, you know, actual event-driven price activity trumps, excuse that verb, overrides seasonality. So there's a seasonality there, and you can say, okay, you know, that means that the prices should be weaker June, July, August, you know, sell in May and go away. And there are reasons, you know, factories shut down, they go on rolling vacations, auto industry retools, people go on vacation. There are reasons why fabrication demand tends to be slower. There are reasons why investment demand tends to be slower. People go away on vacation and they sit in the mountains or at the beach and they think about what's happened in the first half of the year and what they're going to do when they go back to work in September. You know, so that all factors in there. But what's overridden gold and silver this year, it's funny because, yeah, a lot of the bugs say, oh my God, gold is so low, it's stuck below it's stuck around $1,900. We're saying no. You know, we think gold is strong. We had thought that, you know, gold's been trading in, say, 1860, 1920 range over the last 2 or 3 weeks. We had thought 6 months ago that the price would probably be in a 1760, 1820 range at this time. So we're about $100 higher than we thought we would be. And that reflects the fact that it reflects several things, but one of the things it reflects is that the realities of 2021, especially the opening up of economies and stepping away from the lockdown, and people are going out and eating out again and traveling and taking vacations and having dinner parties. You know, the recovery from 2020 has overridden the seasonality. And it's overridden, and so, you know, as I said, you know, gold prices are probably $100 higher than you would have thought they would have been if you were just looking at the seasonality.
So, Jeff, let's talk about some of the main drivers behind the gold price now, because in all fairness, look, you are right, but you're not alone in the fact that you thought gold would be a little bit weaker heading into summer. $1,900 for gold is still a very strong level after an 8 month correction. Gold has bounced back fairly strongly, especially over May and most of June. What are the driving factors here? Is it inflation and the higher inflation data that we have been seeing?
Well, I think that investor expectations of inflation have been causing investors to buy some gold and silver. But I think that other economic and macroeconomic factors have been much more important. Specifically, you know, we did see weakness in the dollar. And it wasn't so much that the dollar was declining. And, you know, in recent days, it's actually shown some strength. But it was investor expectations the dollar would decline, which was causing them to move money out of dollar-based assets into gold. And then interest rates. You had an interest rate scare, if you will, where interest rates rose in the first quarter. But since that time, they've come back down. And, you know, they rose from 1 to 1.74%. And now they're like, yesterday it was 1.46 for the 10-year Treasury bonds. You know, so you're seeing low interest rates on a nominal basis. You're seeing negative interest rates on a real basis. You're seeing enormous monetary and fiscal stimuli, which are kind of causing some of those inflation concerns, but they're also flooding the world with money and where you're going to put that money, because another factor is the very strong stock market. You know, and people who have made a tremendous amount of money in the stock market are increasingly worried. They have very high PE ratios, regardless of which metric you look at. The stock market overall is wildly overvalued, and there are a lot of people who are very nervous. So you've got money coming out of the stock market moving into gold and silver. You've got money coming out of interest-bearing assets moving into gold and silver. And I think that those factors, inflation is in there in the mix of things that are causing people to do that. But I think that the race for returns and the search for returns is actually something that's probably more important in a lot of investors' minds than inflation.
So, Jeff, touching on your comment about the U.S. equity markets, they are still pretty much at all-time highs, though. So what is this rotation you speak of out of the markets into the metals?
It's very tenuous, you know. It's very tenuous, but you are seeing it. And you can't, you know, the reality is that you've got a $100 trillion equity market, $50 trillion of that is in the U.S. equity market, and the gold market's probably like, what, $3 trillion or something? So you can't move en masse out of stocks into gold, but you can move some. So I think that's there. But, you know, you've got a very nervous people. But, you know, I tell the story, in 2015, the Shanghai stock market, in 2012, you know, 2011, 2012, into early 2013, Chinese investors were buying tremendous amounts of gold. And then they shifted and they started buying Chinese stocks. And the Shanghai stock index went parabolic in early 2015. And I was saying to our clients, I said, you know, you guys have gotten out of gold. Maybe you should take some profits in a parabolic Shanghai stock market and move them into gold. And the universal view was, no, we're Chinese, and we're going to stay in until somebody yells fire, you know, because we all think that we can be the first one out the door. And no one's going to leave this party until someone yells fire. And that's exactly what happened. And, you know, they said they're Chinese. I didn't say that. The reality is that American investors and investors around the world who invest in the U.S. market are doing the same thing. They all look at it, you know, it's the reverse of Catskill food. It's like, you know, gosh, the stock market looks grossly overvalued. I ought to be worried, but I'm not leaving, because I've been saying that for 5 years now, that the stock market, actually more like 10 or 11 years since, you know, the stock market's been moving up steadily in a lockstep way, really since 2010. And, you know, investors have been saying, well, the stock market looks so overvalued, I should out, but I'm not, because a year from now it looks even more overvalued and I'm still not leaving, you know. And I think that that's happening. We're doing in our, we've got a chart that we're using in the presentation later today, Friday the 11th, which is the U.S. stock market, and it shows this very narrow channel of price increases from 2010 into about 2018 or so. You know, it's gotten more volatile since then because it's so high. But the reality is that the decapitalization that has been driving that stock market higher continues. And no one's going to leave that party until it's quite clear that the party is over.
I agree with that, Jeff. But following up on the comments, and if everyone thinks that the stock market is overvalued, but no one's leaving the party until it sounds like bigger correction happens, does that mean we're set up for not just a level-headed correction, a fast, sharp correction, which when we see that, typically does hit a wide range of assets?
Yes, that's true. And it's not, you know, let's be honest here. Yeah, it's not a black and white issue. It's shades of gray. And, you know, you could say I'm not leaving the party and take 1% or 2% of your profits and move them into gold. And that's, I think, what we're seeing among institutional investors and high net worth individuals and family offices. They're not leaving the party. They're not buying 100% coverage with S&P puts, but they are taking steps, including buying gold and silver, with some of their profits to protect some of their losses.
So, Jeff, is this all speaking to at least the general rise in gold, gold staying around 1900, the decrease in yields, and the at least short-term little bounce that we've seen in the U.S. dollar? It's not a huge bounce, but there is a little bit of strength in the dollar. And if you go back on a weekly chart, the dollar did just put in a slightly higher low than the one at the very beginning of 2021. Is this all just talking to a more defensive trade, a more defensive mindset that investors, large investors have?
I think, I'm not sure if it's defensive or offensive. I'm never quite sure about that, but it's definitely more diversified. But the reality is, you know, okay, you know, interest rates. Everybody was panicking about rising interest rates, lower bond prices in the first quarter. Now that's reversed and people want to buy bonds, U.S. treasuries, because it's rising. You need U.S. dollars to buy those bonds. Everybody was kind of panicking about the stock market in the first quarter. Now everybody says, okay, you know, this party's continuing. You need U.S. dollars to buy U.S. stock. So there is a demand for the dollar because people want to do that. And so that's supporting the dollar. And so, you know, and it's a reflection of investors saying, I'm worried about yields. I'm worried about the stock market valuation. I'm not necessarily going to take all my money out and put it into gold right now, but I am going to take steps to start to protect my portfolio from what could be a relatively violent and sudden correction in the stock market that could actually coincide with a reversal in the recent decline in Treasury yields.
Well, Jeff, it sounds like we are still then all just waiting for another correction in the stock market, as the U.S. markets have, in all fairness, gotten fairly boring, but it's boring to the upside, right? So that continued strength there. Let's look ahead to next week, because next week is another Fed meeting. All eyes are always on the Fed, and everyone's just waiting for some announcement of a pullback in the easy monetary policy with the recent higher inflation and also the general restart that's going on in the U.S. Do you think the Fed finally starts to say or starts to tell us that they're going to be tapering some of their policies?
I don't think they'll say that per se next week. You know, they already have said that they are ending one of the programs that they started in 2020 during the pandemic. But that's, you know, that's not the larger monetary support program that they're doing. I think that they'll probably pretty much reiterate what they've been saying. They may have a little bit more of a skew toward, hey, the economy is stronger. We're now seeing some of the inflation that we had looked for before we started saying that we're going to taper. But, you know, I don't know that they're going to make a major indication of imminent change in their policy, because they do believe that this inflation is transitory. They do believe that there are still tremendous fiscal issues that need to be resolved before they can take off their life support equipment. So I don't know that. I think they'll be very cautious about signaling any imminent tightening.
So that transitory word, when it comes to inflation, I know the Fed's sticking to it. A number of commentators are saying it still could be transitory. There's also a lot of commentators saying, wake up, people. It's not transitory. This inflation is here to stay. When are we going to know for sure, Jeff? What constitutes transitory and not transitory? Because in all fairness, it's now 2 months that we are starting to see higher inflation.
Well, yeah, 2 months is transitory in my book. You know, I think that you have to get into, let's say, the second quarter of 2022. If you still have high inflation, and again, you know, well, first of all, if you still have high inflation in the core and in the headline figures in the second quarter of 2022, then you've got an indication that this is not transitory and it doesn't simply reflect coming out of lockdown and the recovery of the economy. But the other thing is, you know, as I was alluding to earlier, you have to look at the components. That will give you a better indication as to whether or not this is a transitory or a more permanent move toward higher inflation. And, you know, I just look at the world. I look at the excess labor, the excess, and, you know, it's funny because we have this incredible situation here where we have record numbers of unemployed people in the United States and record numbers of unfilled jobs. And it's great because the guys who have been inflation bulls for 40 years and have been wrong, you know, keep saying, this is it. You know, I told you back in the 1980s and 1990s that inflation would come back. Here it is, you know. And so they can say, well, look at all these unfilled jobs. This is going to have to be inflationary. But the other people say, yeah, but look at the systemic unemployment, not only in the United States, but on a global basis, which we had before the pandemic, and the pandemic has just worsened. And we knew it was going to get worse going forward because we're moving to computerized manufacturing, computerized service provision, computerized agricultural harvesting, and that's just going to exacerbate the surplus labor. Then you have surplus manufacturing capacity and surplus real estate, commercial real estate, and surplus retail capacity. You have Main Street being decimated by the Walmarts and Amazons of the world. And that's not just jobs. That's also tax bases for local economies and other things. So there are a lot of deflationary and disinflationary pressures that people will be watching. And I think you have to pay attention. And, you know, but when people say transitory, it's not 2 months that we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, 2, 3, 4 quarters. If we're into the second quarter of next year and we still have, you know, 4%, 3% inflation, then it's not transitory.
Okay. Thanks for that timeline, because really, I don't think there is necessarily a definition of transitory, but it really all depends on how the Fed sees this inflation. Jeff, let's just summarize here with a couple comments on the actual or some other metals prices. Silver right around that 28 level. All eyes are on that 28.50 level. What's been your assessment of silver throughout this rebound in gold? But in all fairness, silver in the last almost 10, 11 months has been just in a range.
Yeah. It's funny because we keep thinking that the range is going to break, and it will at some point. But right now, you know, I mean, we're looking at a short-term range of, it's been $27.20 to $28.50, $29 for the last 3 or 4 weeks. And if you go broader, it's like $25.80 to $30 over the last, you know, 11 months or whatever you say. You know, and we think that that broader range probably is going to continue for the next several years. And those are high prices for silver. People have to understand, it's this crazy thing. And again, you know, it's like there are people out there waiting for silver to get to $100, and some of them have been waiting since 1981 for silver to get to $100, and they're still waiting, and they're still convinced it's there. And when you say why, you know, why, and they say, well, you know, the tremendous growth in silver demand. Well, silver fabric demand was off like 5 or 6% last year, and it's only projected by us to recover about 1.3% this year. And that green revolution right now is on paper. You are seeing silver use and solar power, but a lot of these other things are very ethereal. When people say, well, you know, the green revolution is going to use a lot of silver, you say, how? They say, in different ways. Say, what kind of different ways? Well, you know, magnets, I guess, or electric motors or electric vehicles. And it's like, no, you know, that's not necessarily there. So a lot of that's hypothetical. So we think that the silver price could actually stay in, say, a $25 to $30, $32 range for the next year or two. Long term, we think it's going to rise, but not because of fabrication demand. We think it's going to rise because of investment demand.
What about commodities broadly then? Because you look at something like base metals, even energy, those are all up. Crude is ending the week here over $70 a barrel. Copper is over $450 right now. There's still a lot of strength in commodities. Do you see that continuing?
I think that it'll mitigate somewhat over the next 12 months or so. You know, we thought that copper, we think that copper prices are a little bit overvalued, and we're trying to pull together some historic data to support that. But we've just been busy with other things. Oil, we thought, you know, it probably had a cap around $65, $68 a barrel. And yeah, it's over $70. So there's a little bit more strength in oil prices than we thought. Some of that is coming out of the lockdown. Some of it is supply chain disruptions. But some of it also just reflects stronger demand. I think that the prices don't necessarily plunge back, but they don't necessarily keep rising at the pace that they have over the last six months or so.
Okay, final comments then here. Jeff deals with the majors, whether you're looking at major gold miners, even major base metal miners, miners in general are making a lot of money, building stronger balance sheets. What do you think that means for the broad sector of metal stocks?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, Canadian companies, and it's not just mining companies. I mean, we're seeing some of these companies say, we've got so much money, we're going to like dividend a bunch out to investors. And you're seeing the same thing with banks. You know, there's a great article in the Financial Post, I guess, today about the tremendous, like $80 billion of excess capital at banks in Canada. And these guys are saying, well, we just can't think of how to deploy this, so we're going to dividend a lot of it out. That's decapitalization. That's like, you know, I'm sorry, we're hiring you. We, the shareholders, are hiring you to utilize this capital to make money going forward. And to some extent, some of these guys are saying, well, we just can't do that. We can't grow this company. You know, I do think that you'll see more mergers and more acquisitions of the majors because they're cash rich. But it's, you know, those are going to be pricey mergers because they're based off of higher gold prices and silver prices and copper prices right now. So I do think you'll see more M&A and more acquisitions of mid-tier and smaller companies by majors. And you'll probably see higher dividends going forward and maybe more buybacks of shares.
All right. Jeff, great chatting with you. Thanks for taking some time on this weekend show. Comprehensive update there, mostly on precious metals, a little bit more on the base metals. But overall, look, commodities are still strong and seem to be maybe in a bit of the summer doldrums right now. But again, there's a lot of news coming out, especially out of the stocks, and a lot of good news too. So I think it is a good time to really be paying attention to some of that news. Jeff, I always appreciate your comments. I'll have you back on the show again soon. Everybody, I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.